Stay tuned for the second hour of the Dr. Future Show. Welcome back, my friends, to the show that never ends. Ladies and gentlemen, KSCO presents the Dr. Future Show. If you would like to join in our show today, you can call us at 831-479-1080. That's 831-479-1080. And now, your host, Dr. Future.
Hey, folks, welcome back to the Dr. and Mrs. Future Show. And this year, it's both of us.
Yes.
It's the full credit for this.
I always like to think that the yin is the silence behind the fullness of the yang.
Perhaps so, Mrs. Future, but you're not necessarily that silent. But, you know, you talk quite a bit.
Well,
you know, you're good at that.
I'm somewhat invisible. It's a superpower.
Be that as it may, in our final hour for the year, we have the privilege of presenting you with one of our Renaissance persons of the area, Mr. Randy Masters. Randy's a researcher in pyramids, sacred sites, mathematical language of light, and the harmonics of sacred numbers. He has a not-so-mystery school in Aptos, California, and he features weekend intensives in sacred geometry, phiometry, tuning, forks, sound, music, and ancient esoteric studies. Very, very interesting collection of information, and he's here to share a little bit of his knowledge with us for the next hour. Welcome, Randy, to the show.
Thank you, Alan and son. Yes, boy, it's been a few years, and we're neighbors even.
That's true. We have quite a few events not too far down the corner from you, actually.
I've just been in a very deep research mode and teaching at the town and running around. And anyway, so it's, wow, thank you for having me be the last hour of the year with you. I think that is just so cool.
Oh, well, our pleasure. And I'd like to catch up with you a little bit.
Yeah, you're a really great spokesman for ancient future connectivity.
Yes, at all comes into the now here. So what's been getting your attention lately, Randy?
Well, been working with scientists to get out my research that could be applied to different technologies because I have, you know, over 40 years of intense unified field research and the harmonics of various things in the universe, and I'm feeling like that. I gave up my regular professional performing career in recording music to do that work. I mean, I had played music nonstop professionally from 1964 to 98, and then I just dove way into this research and been connecting with people all over the world. I'm expecting something to come from it as my soul mission, you know?
Sure, yeah.
And what would be the something? What would make you feel like you're successful in your work?
Yeah, what sparks your joy?
Yeah, well, I do want to get back to producing from my composing years. I have tons of music, and I would like to be able to do that work as well. I'm focusing on applying insights about the musical nature of reality, not just ratios and math, but the math itself is musical, and that's my point. I'm working on a book on that.
The music of math?
Well, in a way, that's part of it. Yeah, there's a lot of different titles, but it, like a harmonic universe type of things. I have a whole list of titles, so we'll just see how I go with that in the marketing so it can reach people. But it does show, from all of this work, analysis of the pyramids and sacred sites around the world, things off-planet, which I call off-campus, is my campus, the Earth School, you know.
Sure, yeah.
There's, having been a musician and analyzed things and been really way up on music theory, when I started looking at things in physics and biology and you name it, I actually saw the musical patterns of the various math. And that's something that hasn't really been revealed fully by a lot of the researchers for people to really understand. So what I'm wanting to establish is a branch of sciences called the harmonic sciences. And I use different numbers than some of the ones that some of the physicists use, and many of them don't even know how those figures were originally calculated. They plug them in, and some of them just plug them in after out of all their teachings that they've learned somewhere, and are not really, some are not as connected to what those numbers really mean.
Well, what's your definition of harmony when you're talking about a harmonic universe?
Well, there's lots of different types of combinations of overtones and undertones that produce a type of harmony. Now, some of that harmony has dissonance, and that dissonance is useful. And some of it creates silences and space, as you were mentioning earlier about silence. Mm. Is a very important part of that. So you need things on each side of that silence, and like the parentheses, you might say.
Mm-hmm.
And certain combinations are more harmonious than others, more supportive of interactions that get along, that are synergistic, that don't compete and fight each other, but actually work to stimulate each other toward more consciousness ultimately.
So is there a sound equivalent that you might say is like the tree of life, where you have that beautiful sacred geometry where the pattern is just very similar everywhere and it just scales infinitely?
Yeah, well, that fractal mm-hmm. of that scaling on all different scales is there, and I've certainly mapped very heavily for more than 30 years about the harmonics of the and the fractal of the flower of life and the tree of life and how those work, and I'm also exploring the three-dimensionality of that.
Mm-hmm.
And I have notes for all of that type of thing, and it's very, very interesting. And it gets into both math as user-friendly star language, in other words, language of creation is what I'm meaning in the moment about star language,
mm-hmm.
not just that it may have come from advanced places besides the Earth and be brought here or downloaded by people who are here. I mean, all of that's part of the picture. But the seeing math, it's not left brain, although we use our left brain, it's the whole brain nature, because if when you analyze things from the microscope to the telescope, there's mathematical things going on that are not fussed with by humans. Just based on observation, there it is. And so I've analyzed a lot of things saying, well, there it is. I didn't change the numbers to fit my preference or to prove I'm proving a point, because I didn't change the numbers. There they are. They've been missed.
What about the intersection of sound with biology? Have you explored that pretty deeply?
Well, I've analyzed very deeply things in the DNA and in biology.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, we even analyzed in the lab Sai Baba's Vibhuti powder.
Oh, yeah.
And found that it was, you know, rhodium, iridium, and carbon.
Huh.
And rhodium and iridium are two of the superconductors from the platinum group elements.
Yeah.
So no wonder it works in stimulating certain spiritual kinds of investigations and openings. But also that the sound frequency from that is a perfect harmonic whole number relationship with the DNA itself.
Oh, interesting. Wow.
Another thing that I did of interest. Now, I'm certainly not wanting to alienate any listeners, because there's a background behind all these things. My intent in these examples is that there's a coherent musical universe everywhere we look, and even places we haven't looked. And that's coherent. And that doesn't mean that there isn't a usefulness for chaos within all of that. But that's the point, whether people like math or not. And many don't like it because they never saw how it connected to things.
Yeah. Okay, can you hold on a sec? Randy, we're going to go to a commercial break, and we'll come back
okay.
talk about more about this. We're talking to Randy Masters, a master teacher of many disciplines, and we're talking about harmonics and biology. And we'll be back after the break. Okay, welcome back to the Dr. and Mrs. Future Show. We're talking to Randy Masters, who runs the Not-So-Mystery School in Aptos, California. And Randy, before we get any further, could you tell us what you mean by Not-So-Mystery School?
It's a matter of things that I believe are an information that's our birthright to know, that's not been kept from us to dumb us down.
Ah, okay.
And that's so it's exposing and not making a mystery out of it for the purpose of manipulation and control by withholding information. Now, that's different than not throwing pearls before swine, as they say.
Yeah.
You know?
Now, I listened to one interview with you last night in preparation for the show, and I was really impressed to how you like to explain things to people to turn on their inner light so they, when they get it, right, and they get it and they start becoming more lit or more alive.
That's absolutely.
And it's different for each person. I think that's one of the things you were saying, too. And
yeah, people have different backgrounds, and some people understand things, and other people, I mention numbers, and they go to sleep, and it gives them a headache. And other people get fed by it as informational, real food for thought.
Right, right. And
or thought as food.
Thought as food.
Yeah.
And expanding one's own personal understanding of the universe by asking the right questions to help expand what you think is real.
Can I say something about the 1080 of KSCO?
Sure, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, this is fine. Well, maybe some of the listeners don't know this, but the average radius of the moon from the center to the edge is 1,080 miles is the average.
Wow. That's
great. And that's a very important number, you know, and how that fits in to the Earth. There's a whole dynamic of that that's very important. And you put the moon on the Earth, and then you make a baseline go through the equator of the Earth up to the center of the moon, and it forms a cross-section of the Giza Pyramid. It just goes on and on. And then when you make an egg around that, hole shape, the moon sitting on the Earth, and you make an egg shape out of that, and you start revolving it 90 degrees so it keeps getting smaller by certain phi ratios, that's called the Venus blueprint. And when you do that a number of times, you can plot the orbits of the planets and things in there. It's really amazing. It's been something that's been part of the mystery schools since ancient times.
Wow. And so this is all just a mathematical pattern.
Yeah.
Is described and with the ratios.
A purposeful one, you know.
A what?
A purposeful one. Maybe, you know, people could observe it, can measure it, and then make an observation. But there may be, and I suggest there's a higher order of why it is exactly in those proportions.
Hmm. And so you're discovering the proportions without necessarily saying that we know why, but there they are to be found in nature.
Well, yeah, I don't always say why, but some of the whys I do know. And that gets very, very interesting when you dig down, you go down these rabbit holes, and it tells you why, and it's purposeful for many, many different reasons. So that's exciting to discover these things. And in fact, just a little planetary thing here for a moment to give people an idea. I was told years ago to study the rings of Saturn for music healing purposes.
Mm.
One of my music students worked for NASA, actually worked on the Mars rover.
Uh-huh.
And so he got the Saturn data from the Saturn lead scientist at NASA for me, and I analyzed it in ways that NASA had not looked at it. And I suggest they wouldn't have, because you'd have to have the right musical background to do what I did.
Sure, yeah.
And think that, even to think of going there, that's my suggest.
Mm-hmm.
And it turns out that all the spins of the rings were all spinning in whole number harmonic proportions of a certain ratio of phi of the golden mean.
Wow.
That's interesting. I just got a request to explain phi.
The golden ratio of approximately, that's phi or phi, phi.
Yes.
Not the fo and fum part. You know, that gets a little stranger. But it's the of approximately 1.618, approximately to 1 as a ratio. The number itself is not phi. It has to be a ratio. So you get that in the height of an egg and the width of an egg, and you take a square and you add 0.618 to that, and you form a larger golden rectangle, you know, and it just goes on. And that's the major fractal throughout our universe that spirals in all areas of sciences in all shapes, from the microscope to the macro, to the telescope.
Mm-hmm.
And that is what the main fractal, meaning a scalable pattern that holds things together primarily about the physical universe, although there are etheric components as well in that. And it gets into light and the ratios in light, because I've analyzed deep things in light, like the spectral lines of hydrogen, and found all these musical ratios in it and things like that.
Yeah, I remember Pat Flanagan was quite fascinated with the phi frequency as a core for understanding the universe. It sounds
I made a whole set of tuning forks for him based on a whole phi spiral. And I also made a chime for him based on harmonically decoding the Sri Yantra, which he had spent like 25 years trying to understand.
Mm. Mm-hmm. I think the interview I saw with you, you were talking about the Sri Yantra being a cymatic reflection of Om.
Well, I saw that happen in a film back in the 80s. where there was a metal plate with sand on it and a tonoscope where you could pronounce ohm correctly and it would vibrate the plate, and I watched it form the ohm. I saw that. And several people I know had also seen that. All the people I asked to get a copy of that film, no matter who had seen it or had a copy, they no longer had that. That was kind of very interesting.
It's going to disappear, huh?
I think there is a film called Somatics. It may be in there.
Hans Jenny, I think, was the original.
By the way, we were recently at the Exploratorium, and they have a Somatics machine like that, where you can tone into a machine that has a tray that vibrates the sand. And if you get it right, you can get something that's pretty interesting. I don't know if it's calibrated enough.
Early experiments were done in cymatics or kymatics. The Greek pronunciation also allows you to say kymatics as well. And I'm teaching a whole workshop on the 18th and 19th of January with Eric Larson here in Aptos, who makes and designed the cymatics machines, where we put sound frequencies into water and take pictures of them, and it shows all the different geometries. This exciting realm of how sound and matter interact together.
Yeah, it makes the sound visible.
Fascinating.
Where do you see this going? Is it revealing the secrets of the universe to you? And
it has, and it also to other colleagues that I know and others who are no longer living, and some who are no longer living because they spoke about what they saw. And so we live in a very precarious time where much of this information has been sequestered, hidden, denied, and on to keep the consciousness down. And it's like a leaking radiation barrel. It can't be held back.
Okay, well, that's a very interesting paradigm. It's like you're saying that, in a sense, some of our culture has held us back from our true identity in a way, or from our larger identity anyway. Is that the case, or is that just we're just waking up?
Well, I would say that the culture did. I mean, the certain powers that be that do not want
within the culture.
That's why we have fluoride in the water, for instance, and many other things that I won't get into here, designed to keep the pineal gland from functioning so that we do not transduce and transceive light. That means receiving and transmitting transceiver properly, and there's many things done to keep people down on the farm. As a result of that, you see the destruction of things in the environment. You see non-life honoring technologies being employed and invented and used, and all of that, that anti-life stuff.
I see.
And
so it's not just ignorance, it's actually willful misalignment of use of force.
Absolutely, because these good observations, you might say, or truthful ones, or how the deeper mechanics of creation works, can be used positively or negatively. There's a lot of amazing weapons out there that use this knowledge for the wrong purposes.
Like hypersonic missiles and stuff.
It goes on and on. Plasma weapons, and on and on.
Well, the good thing about having so much connectivity through so many channels now, people are worried about the control of the big search engines, but there are just so many ways that people can independently connect with each other now. It seems like it would be impossible to keep this information hidden much longer.
Well, if we open up our telepathy and the pineal gland and all the higher functioning of the glands to more of a telepathic, more people can just pull the information right out of the Akashic records where it's known, without even an internet, without any technology like a lot of ancients did. They tuned into the field and wrote it down and made transcripts. Where did they get it? They pulled it right out of the field of the quantum entangled field where that information still is.
I mean, kind of like a cosmic Google?
Yeah, exactly. Like the Library of Alexandria, it's all stuff is in the Akashic field, and somebody tuned to that can recreate any of those books.
So if there are lots of people are accessing information directly, then that gets past the problem of fake news and control issues.
Absolutely. And so that's, see, the greatest fear of the dimly lit, as I call them, powers. I have terms for any kind of misbehavior that I see out there. I give them nicknames. So that's just part of we
the
don't
dimlets.
Have
I like
the
that.
Dimlets.
The dimlets.
Dimly lit. You know.
Dimly lit. Okay. That's
now, originally, I thought most of the beings had a soul, and so that they just had that pilot lights turned down, but become aware of those who don't, and another whole a level which we're seeing playing out in the world. But overall, I'd like to look at beings of having that God spark in them of creation. and maybe it hasn't woken up yet.
Right, well, let's keep giving them some opportunities to do that
the
after the break.
Phase. Yeah. Yes, well, we were talking to Randy Masters, maestro of the singing universe. We'll be back after the break. All right, welcome back to the show. We're talking to Randy Masters, a interdisciplinary teacher of many disciplines. So much to explore, and it's not so mystery school in Aptos, California.
Yeah.
Yes, we had one comment who thinks you should be on Coast to Coast. You ever been on Coast?
No, I've had opportunities. Uh-huh. There'll be a timing for me to go on Coast to Coast.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm waiting for my own particular timing for that for many different reasons.
Sure. Mm. No, and it makes sense. It would be a particular timing.
I've spoken to Tesla things and many different kinds of things. But, you know, I'm open to being more public in good ways, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Would you say you're overly optimistic at this point?
And overly?
I mean, not overly.
Somewhat?
Somewhat optimistic.
That's a wonderful question. And I would say it takes more discipline to remain optimistic now.
Yeah.
Mm, yeah.
That's my nature, although I see many and know of many things, public and not, that are very disturbing. But I do believe in that spark that I was referring to, if that wakes up. And I really want to see more and more examples of that spark waking up and news that shows, you know, like the Daily Spark. That'd be a real good name for something.
Mm-hmm. Well, in response to that, Randy, I want to talk about the concept of resonance, because in all of time and history, we've always known that the naysayers have an agenda and that there is a time when there will be either a great expansion and renaissance of all of the great capacities of humanity, or there'll be a lot of tools used to suppress that. And of course, people are looking around saying, oh, great, all these tools are being used to suppress it. But as somebody who has been here since the early days of the computerization of knowledge, I see it that the people got their hands on the tools early enough that they're still in charge. And only a certain section is going to be able to be fooled as some of the more malevolent forces centralize the knowledge, but that the vast majority of people are just going to self-organize around their own special interests. And it's just a matter of time until we reinvent our society in ways that serve the common good.
So. Well, I feel right now that there's a kind of a war against consciousness that's not only for the planet, but when this planet wakes up, what that means for the rest of our solar system and even beyond our solar system. So it's a really critical time. And the AI doesn't have a soul. I know somebody working for a big company working on musical algorithms to create music completely from AI. But it's not the soul. It's that soul of a being coming through the music that touches people's lives way beyond the patterns. The soul that animates those patterns beyond an algorithm that could create similar patterns.
Mm-hmm. And so you think that the AI soul is the big threat for the future of humanity?
Absolutely. And 5G is part of that. That total control of the thoughts to, you know, not have what a human being can be, should be, was, I would say, even designed to be, for that to really come to fruition and progress. And so I see a tremendous effort in all areas of life to try to keep that from waking up, because once it gets to a certain point, the dimly lit gig is up.
In the infinite intelligence of the universe, wouldn't AI just be part of that? Ultimately, I mean, if it is all connected and it is all one, how can it be separate, ultimately?
Well, we're talking about suppressing light.
Yeah.
We can coexist with things that are aimed at suppressing light. However, that's not life-affirming. I believe the universe was created that the creator of all it is, let's say, to use that term, wants life to continue and be getting better.
Yeah.
Not just that persists, or it becomes taken over by mechanical means for control purposes. And why is that control? What's that really about?
Well, what's the motivation behind it?
Yeah, and so I believe that life wants life to happen, and life meaning the Creator infused everything in life with creation. And those sparks, those particles, adamantine particles, whatever you want to call them, that everything is composed of, is actually in, at its heart, when it's aligned with the Creator of all it is, and not stepped down powerful ETs that people have portrayed as gods for control, but the actual Creator of all it is wants life to continue. And that's a different alignment than the alignment based on controls to, because of the fear of what that life light would do.
Well, the fear of that the controller will then be the controlled, and they'll have to give up that elitist point of view on their relationship to the rest of creation.
Yeah, there's a certain belief in the illusion of separation that's playing out. But, you know, I'm looking for things that resonate with creation, that resonate with the spark that where everything can be better. Somebody you meet or talk to or see is better off because of the interaction. Even if you don't say anything, just the interactions of your particle fields, they're better off for the presence that you just shared.
Yeah, because we're resonant beings. And our Absolutely. DNA recognizes our true nature.
And what I found very interesting in that, like, Saturn project that I did is that that DNA golden mean ratio that I found is the golden mean ratio of the DNA, which I figured out what that was. That's one of my discoveries.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah, and there's a lot of things that show that linkage. There's more to it. The Saturn project is very, very deep and gets into some really interesting areas. But the main thing is that seeing how that fractal plays out of that golden ratio is super important. And that's in composition, and a lot of early composers knew that and used that as guiding principles of that ratio behind their music in many different ways. And so I've studied that type of thing and have that going on in my own history as a composer.
Chromatic tuning, is that part of that process? Somebody asked about chromatic tuning, that you were engaged with that. Could you explain that to us?
Well, there's different terms. A chromaticism is like is the term where you've just got a note, like for every note on the piano, moving up and down by half steps and that type of thing. But it's the equal tempered tuning that we've adapted that started to be explored musically by Bach back in the Baroque era. And he learned it from a guy named Werkmeister, and the Chinese studied it at least 90 years before to 9 decimal points on their abacus, and they decided not to use it. But it's become very convenient. That's where the frets are placed on almost all the guitars, for instance. And that's a tuning system that allows a flexibility in music where you can go from any key to any key at any time on the keyboard without stopping the performance and retuning the keyboard. Mm. And it's convenient, and it has its place in music history. But it's a synthetic tuning system where that is not found in nature. Mm. It's a complete mental thing based on the half step is the 12th root of 2, like a C to a F sharp is a square root of 2 ratio. In other words, a non-rational ratio is not based on natural overtones and undertones. So there's tons of other tuning systems, and I've studied all the tuning systems throughout antiquity, and that's very interesting. Ancient Greek ones and Egyptian and India, all over the world, because those ratios create emotions. When you play musical notes that are in certain ratios, you can pinpoint emotions in certain ways that equal temperament does not. It implies it heads toward it, but it doesn't hit the nail on the head in some cases, apart from the other things in the music that make it work. So tuning systems involve what ratio between notes, what distance, and what's the mathematics of that distance. And then when you start playing, like you play a raga in India in equal temperament, and then change the tuning of the sitar and play the same raga with the proper Indian ratios and the emotion, you hit the nail right on the head.
Hmm. So the emotions become more powerful when it's tuned?
Oh, way, way more.
Wow.
But I'm not suggesting to get away from equal temperament. A musical old guy in a university wrote a book called How Equal Temperament Ruined Harmony and Why You Should Care. is very, very interesting, the whole history of it. Mm-hmm. And what it's kind of like music tuned to the Gregorian calendar as opposed to the natural cycles. That's an analogy that I frequently use.
Gotcha, mm-hmm. Yeah. Great. So what do you like to compose? What tuning system do you use yourself?
The tuning system depends on the intent of the music.
I see.
Whether it's a cappella or, you know, where there's no fixed pitch instrument like keyboards and so on, or in what kind of music you're making. Like Bach had a whole bunch of tuning systems, I would say more than 16, and all of his pieces were written in different tuning systems. So if you want to listen to Bach, J.S. Bach, that is, there's a whole Bach family, and get the right effect, you need to listen to Bach played in the tuning system that he composed in, not adjusted to equal temperament for convenience. And you also need to listen to Bach's music based on the tuning reference of what he used for his A note, let's say, or C note, whatever his tuning reference, that's basically a half step lower than what we listen to today. Baroque era was typically 415 hertz, which is a G sharp or A flat. It's a half step below where we are today. A lot of the great composers tune to different things. And so when you shift the tuning, mm-hmm. the ratios may be all held in place, but you're listening to it at a different pitch, higher or lower. You're not hearing it in the pitch window that it was conceived in. And that is a problem for the purity. And years ago, before the year 2000, 25 years before that, there was Switched on Bach, you know, by
Walter. I remember that. That was quite an interesting piece.
And then Walter Carlos became Windy Carlos. And then in the year 2000 did an album called Switched on Bach 2000, where he played all the same pieces, but in the actual tunings the Bach had and with all the advances of the electronic keyboards.
Really? Wow.
Yeah, and it's really interesting to compare that. Of course, the original was only, you know, originally was out on vinyl, and then even digital versions of both recordings will show you some things about what I'm talking about.
Yeah, let's continue this after the break. I'd imagine that the synthesizers and start to open up the possibilities for what you do. All right, we're talking to Randy Masters, who's a professional composer, recording artist, and is also into the mathematical language of music itself. We'll be right back.
Hi, registered pharmacist Ben Fuchs here. I've been studying healthy bodies for 35 years, and what I've got to tell you may shock and surprise you, but if you listen up, it may change your life. Even women who have healthy skin may find themselves breaking out around the time of their monthly period. If this is you, you may find it helpful to know that from a vitamin standpoint, nothing beats the bees for keeping skin blemish-free, especially vitamin B6, pyridoxine. Vitamin B6 is one of those vitamins you don't hear a lot about. It's especially significant for the skin. It was discovered by a Hungarian scientist in the 1930s who used it to treat skin lesions in rats. Dr. Abram Hoffer used it as part of his protocol for treating schizophrenia. Dr. Hoffer also wrote that vitamin B6 deficiencies can cause white spots in the fingernails. Vitamin B6 is also a key player in the production of estrogen, and this makes it an invaluable supplement for treating non-skin PMS symptoms like swelling, breast tenderness, moodiness, and depression. What's more, as the levels of estrogen fall, the skin can suffer too. Zits, oiliness, and a blotchy tone are just some of the ways the monthly plunge in the production of the important female hormone can show up on the skin. The B vitamins in general, which are involved in the building of all biochemicals, can help keep skin healthy, and pyridoxine in particular, which is found in grains, meat, dairy, eggs, and fresh fruits and vegetables, seems to have a special role in the production of the hormone estrogen. If you're not getting enough of these foods in your diet, using a daily 100 milligram to 200 milligram dose of B6 in a supplement, along with the rest of the B complex, can help a woman maintain a clear complexion all month long.
Welcome back to the show.
May I make a comment relative to that last commercial?
Yes, absolutely.
It's all raw material, so things are happening in the moment.
Sure.
Well, I think one of the remedies people need, all that good stuff about B6 and the B vitamins, mm-hmm. which of course is being attacked because of how important the B vitamins are for people. But the B3 Hammond organ also has some very good therapeutic effects. If you listen to Groove Organ by all the great jazz and rhythm and blues organ players, and mm-hmm. so I'm just going to put a plug in for some organic B3.
Mm-hmm. Organic B3 in the musical domain. That's interesting. You know, you bring up the whole idea of more natural systems of music. It's kind of fascinating because from what you're saying, there have been many, many different systems of music and ways of organizing chords and such over the years. Now that we have synthesis of electronic music, does that open up a new realm for you to explore as a composer?
Oh, it absolutely does. You can create new tone qualities that don't exist in any of the other known instruments. There's many interesting things that can be done. There's the analog synthesizers, and then there's synthesizers, and then the digital. And, you know, there's certain things to deal with in that world between analog and digital. But there's many things, and the synthesizers can be tuned to microtonal things, like I could tune a synthesized keyboard to the Rings of Saturn, for instance, and make some new music. And I can take a lot that I've done in science, make music with that. But behind it all is not the scientific experiment of the music. I believe it has to have soul and emotion and tell a story. I'm not any more interested in a lot of the scientific things that a lot of composers have done that is lacking in soul and lacking in emotion. It doesn't touch the heart. So if it's not heart-based, I mean, the science has got to bridge the mental worlds plus the emotional worlds in the heart and help that. And that's just a stand I've taken. There's a lot of music I won't play anymore that I played at different times in my life. But when I find that it really is lacking that, then I don't want to have anything to do with it anymore.
Sure. Yeah, you got to go for your spark of joy, as they say.
And which qualities do you emphasize in music? Which kind of music do you like to play now?
Well, mostly when I perform now, I'm not playing the trumpet anymore and guitar in public, but I do play piano at certain events, and I just play my own music most of the time. Like, I have so much that I've composed, world music from all kind of cultures from all over the world, and I enjoy doing that. Chinese, Japanese, African, Caribbean, Indian, you name it, Greek. I did one soundtrack for a film. It was done locally here, Maddalena Z, Voyage of the Heart, and I wrote mostly Italian music for that particular movie back in the 86, I think it was, somewhere back then.
Wow, when you see music, you actually see a map of history.
Yeah. One of the things that I did since the 60s, that all of my music and jazz music that I did with my various groups, including Solar Plexus, we made 4 albums and things, but it was international jazz music. It's the blending of cultures. Like, I wrote a song with the Japanese melody, and underneath it are Brazilian rhythms.
Cool. Global music.
In Japan, people love Brazilian music, so there's an additional layer of affinities going on. And I mix things, because if you study these cultures deep enough, you begin to see the commonalities and common spark. I could take one scale, like the black keys on the piano, and make a piece of music that relates to a dozen cultures.
Wow.
Just an example, and all using one scale for the melody. But everything else that I do would make a different melody, so I could make it sound like a Japanese melody played on a shakuhachi, but the ornaments are different than listening to a melody played by an American Indian flute. Same scale, different ornaments, and you can tell the difference.
I just got a question in for you from Gabrielle in New Jersey. She says she's curious about BB, capital B, small b, flat. I heard that ohm ends the last syllable on BB, and that it's been known to make some animals crazy when they hear it over a sustained amount of time. Are you aware of this or any other notes of harmonies that have physical effects on animals and people?
Lot. I didn't know that particular one. She said, so B flat, big B, little b.
Yeah.
That's very interesting because I do study things in nature. Dolphins, whales, bees. I've made tuning forks to the frequencies of bees in flight because there's an anti-gravity thing there.
Oh, yeah? Yeah.
Yeah, and the frequency coming out of one of the earliest studied black holes is a B-flat, in fact.
Wow. Mm.
And when lightning strikes water, it creates certain amino acid releases that create life, and that's also some part of the research we've done, and that's also a B-flat. Mm. And I know of lots of amazing B-flats that are life-affirming, okay, like those examples. I hadn't heard about a particular one. Depends on what octave it's in and what B-flat. All B-flats are not created equal. They may exist in a musical octave between, let's say, C and C.
Mm-hmm.
somewhere in there is all kind of phenomena. I octavize everything just to understand it, but all B flats are not created equal. And there's a lot of notes where you tune to a slightly different one, and it's good for cell rejuvenation. The list goes on and on. Oh. So I study all that and do mathematical analysis of it, and I look for healthy applications for well-being and also for technologies. And I've been involved with some technologies where we use certain sound frequencies, for instance, that came out of this research, like frequencies that came out of the sun, for instance, that have been used in a certain technology and created results that another note by that, whatever that name would be, did not create the result.
Yeah, it reminds me of Fiorella Terenzi a little bit on that.
Oh, yeah. I love all of that and the different aspects of astronomy, and I study that too, looking for the effects of sound and the brain waves of dolphins and what, and the 1.45 hertz trithalamic frequency that balances the pituitary, pineal, and hypothalamus with the heart, and that a lot of sacred sites around the world are putting out that frequency. That gets very, very interesting.
Yeah. Have you ever played music for other species, like dolphins and whales, or something that...
I've been involved with some things like that, yeah. And one story I find really interesting, a lot of friends have done research with dolphins, and a friend composed a 10-note melody and then went out by Florida, out in the waters, the ocean, and dropped a hydrophone in the water and had an electronic wind synthesizer instrument. You play it like a saxophone, but it's hooked up to a synthesizer. And so when that person played the first 5 notes of the melody, given there were 10 in this phrase, the dolphin sang back all 10.
Really? Wow.
Cool.
Yeah. Yeah, so I have a lot of very interesting dolphin stories. I find that very interesting that we can learn a lot. I've heard recently, I don't have all the data on this, that they've done sound measurements in the ocean and they found that the fish are singing.
Mm, wow.
Yes, I've heard of a Santa Cruz composer who goes out and plays a synthesizer with the frogs near Natural Bridges. Yeah, where apparently the group singing of the frogs respond to some...
I haven't done that. I've played with crickets and other things, and I would think somebody also could take any one of the stringed instruments, because the end of the bow for stringed instruments is called the frog. And I just would wonder what that would be. You know,
yeah.
I mean, things that seem unrelated and sort of humorous actually sometimes give us a clue of something we might want to do, and know what that would mean in terms of the organic quality of the stringed instruments that could play any pitch and not be limited by the tuning system or by the frets on a guitar, for instance, or how a keyboard.
Yeah, a little more freedom there. Yeah, wow.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, in the final couple minutes here, Randy, it sure went by fast. What can you tell us what's next, and what workshops are you doing that people should be aware of?
Well, thank you. I'm going to do one with Eric Larson on the 18th and 19th of January here in Aptos. And people could certainly email me at universalsong@yahoo.com, universalsong@yahoo.com, if they're interested, and I can get them more information. And Eric has been making the cymatics machines, state of the art. We're going to be really showing in live form, too, in the pictures of the sounds that are created in water with the different sound frequencies and the implications on technology of cymatics, what that whole world, the whole world of shape science, and that shapes are structured by sound, and sounds have impacts on shapes. So, you know, it gets into really deep things that touch all different aspects of life.
Yeah, interplay of sound and shapes and light. And DNA music, you ever played with the music of the DNA itself?
I played with that. I make tuning forks and chimes to harmonics of the DNA. And that is something that's on my list to do more with that. But so far, it's wind chimes and other chimes, and people have been using my tuning forks to do sound healing with based on the DNA. I've also been working with the DNA translated from the Hebrew language, certain DNA patterns, and so I can see some profound music being done with that. Right now, it's at more of an experimental stage, and I want to have tests done to show what is it actually doing.
Yeah, fascinating. Well, I see we barely scratched the surface here, and the time is up. More can be found out at universalsong.net, universalsong.net, talking to Randy Masters.